I'm reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Second chapter, verse 71. Vihaya kaman yah saravan pumangs charati nispriha nirmamo nirahankara sashantim adhigachati. Translation. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Purport. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself, and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in this world, is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense satisfaction. But when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself there was no desire to fight, but for Krishna the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna. Isha vasyamidam sarvam. And therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely, knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than Him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. In this verse, Krishna speaks about how to attain peace. And Srila Prabhupada, in the translation, adds the word real peace. How one can get real peace. It's possible to become somewhat peaceful by taking a sleeping pill, or maybe drinking some alcohol and then going to sleep. One can become somewhat peaceful. Or one can become somewhat peaceful by doing what is called meditation. There are many teachers of yoga and what they call meditation, but it's not actually meditation according to the ancient techniques of yoga. What is called meditation is more like a relaxation technique. So one may feel somewhat relaxed, somewhat free from stress. But real peace, Krishna states here, is on a much deeper level than simply getting relaxed, de-stressed a bit, ready to charge back into all the activities which cause the stress in the first place, or the attitude that goes with it. Krishna says here, that we can get peace if we give up desire. Lack of peacefulness, lack of a peaceful mentality, comes because we have so many desires. As long as we have desires, then we're not peaceful, because we're always thinking about how to fulfill them. Not only thinking, but acting. We perform activities to fulfill desires. And one desire leads to another desire. And especially in the modern age, desire is promoted as desirable. Whereas in cultures, generally in cultures previous to the modern culture, it was considered that to be very ambitious and greedy and wanting to enhance one's situation more and more and more, that was considered a fault. In the modern age, that is considered a quality, that one should always desire to get more and more and more and be better and better and better in terms that is defined for us by a highly materialistic civilization. So the whole civilization is promoting desire. If you walk on the street, there are so many billboards promoting, buy this, spend your money this way or the other. Mostly, all the billboards are promoting simply how to spend money. And any magazine, any time we go on the internet, is simply advertisements which stoke the fire of desire in our hearts. And then there's the impetus to work hard to get money to fulfill those desires or to purchase those items, and we end up frustrated. Either we're frustrated because we can't get everything that we want, or even if we do get the things that we think we want and need, we're still frustrated because they don't give us ultimate satisfaction. So Krishna says here that one who is a person who is free from desires for sensual enjoyment, who gives up all sense of proprietorship. In other words, instead of thinking this is mine, instead of thinking of anything as mine, one should actually realistically understand that nothing is ours. What belongs to us? We think something belongs to us, but we come into this world with nothing, we leave with nothing, and in between we fight over everything. So this is foolishness. And free of false ego. False ego means to think that to identify ourselves in terms of our bodily identification. I am Canadian, for instance. We just heard about Canada Day, in which the whole country will be celebrating the ignorance of thinking themselves Canadian. Because it is ignorance. Sorry to say, this may sound like anti-nationalism, but nationalism is another form of ignorance. Because again, we come for a very short time, we're born in one country, we stay for some time, then we die, we don't know where we came from, we don't know where we're going to, and in the meantime we think, I'm Canadian, or I'm American, or whatever passport may have. We may have two or three passports, then what do? So, this is misidentification, false ego. I am this body, these are my possessions, but we don't actually know who we are. So Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke to give us actual knowledge of who we are, by which we can attain peacefulness. Because we can't attain peace if we are cultivating desire on a false platform or cultivating a false identity. Obviously, a madman cannot be peaceful. Mad, if someone is mad, it means that the mind is not working properly. It's working in the wrong way. So a madman cannot be peaceful. But pretty much everyone in this world is insane. There was Srila Prabhupada, he gave an example when he was living in Allahabad. There was a trial lawyer who was supposed to plead for innocence on the part of his client, innocence from the charges put against him on the grounds of insanity. So one psychologist was brought to examine the accused person. And he gave the verdict in court that yes, I've examined him, and according to my understanding, he is insane. But then, I've been examining people all my life, and if I just look around me, I see everyone's insane. But actually, that is the fact. Insanity, that could be defined in various ways. One kind of insanity is to perform all our activities in a manner that works against our own self-interest. That's insanity, isn't it? Just like if you get money out of an ATM, which you're supposed to spend for bread and butter and all these kind of things, or bread and margarine, if you think butter is not very healthy. So, and you get the notes out of the machine, and then you just rip them all up. That would be considered insane, isn't it? You work hard, you get money, and then you just rip up all the money. And then you can't spend the money on the items that you need to do so. Or if someone has a habit of repeatedly scratching their body and inflicting wounds on themselves, that would be considered one type of insanity. But everyone is acting in a manner that is detrimental to their real well-being, first of all, because no one knows really who they are. If we don't know who we are, then how can we act for our self-interest? If we think that I am this body, this is me, what I see, what I look in the mirror is me, what I see in the mirror is me, that is a misunderstanding. Because the body is temporary. I am eternal. The body is matter. But I am spirit. Matter has no consciousness. I am conscious. I am the spiritual living within the body, spiritual living being that gives life to the body. Only if the spirit is within the body can it be considered living. As soon as someone dies, we say he has gone away. In any language of the world, as far as I know, I'm pretty sure there are probably about 20, 30 languages that are spoken among all the attendees here today. So I'm pretty sure that in every language, if someone dies, you'll say he's gone away, isn't it? I know how to say it in English. How do you say it in French? Someone dies? No French speakers here? Well, I didn't hear, but it means gone away, yeah? Then in Bengali you say chale geche. In Hindi, chale gaya. So many languages. In Marathi? You don't know Marathi? You're Punjabi. Punjabi? I'm trying to think now. Alright. Any other languages? Tamil? Illa. Illa sounds like Tamil. No. Anyway, there's so many languages, and in any language you say gone away. But what went away? The body is there. The same body is still there, so who, what went away? It actually, by saying this, we don't think about it. That's the problem. We inherently express an understanding that the body is not the person. That the person is the soul within the body which has now gone away. So if we think that the body is the person, it means that we actually never knew the person, because the body is only chemicals. The person is the living being, the spiritual being. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives knowledge of who we actually are. We are eternal spiritual beings. Now if we consider, of course this might sound like some religious dogma which is served up on Sunday evenings and you have to sit through it before getting to the real thing that's served up, which is the prasadam. But before that we have to listen to some boring lecture. But if we consider it, which we should do, this is very important, isn't it? And if you're not the body, which there's very good evidence that we're not the body, and we're eternal spiritual beings, then it's really in our self-interest to understand who we actually are. We're so busy to feed the body and clothe the body and shelter the body and in so many ways act for the benefit of the body. But however much we look after the body, whatever exercises we do, even if you do yoga, you have to die at some point, and the body that we're looking after so very nicely becomes fit for burning or burying. Or if you're a Parsi, I don't think they allow it in this country, but they throw it to the vultures. That's what's done in Parsi religion. The dead body is thrown to the vultures for eating. In other words, the body is disposed of. So we're very serious about looking after the body, but we're not serious about looking after the soul. And therefore, we suffer. We suffer in this material world because we have misplaced our self-interest. We don't know who we are. So here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives real knowledge of who we actually are and advice on how we can best live our lives in this world so that our actual self-interest can be fulfilled. The first thing is to know who we are. So we're spiritual living beings. Okay. All right. What does that mean, actually? This word spiritual is used a lot. It's generally used by shallow kind of people who just talk about spiritual, without really being very serious to understand what it means to be spiritual. So, the actual meaning of spirit is that which is Sat Chit Ananda, that which is eternal, does not die, which means it doesn't get reborn either, is Chit, is conscious, and is Ananda, which is blissful, which is quite opposite to the situation in the material world where everything is subject to destruction. However carefully we try to preserve our body by exercise, good diet, it's good to do these, it's good to look after the body, we're not saying it's a bad thing to do so, but the body is destined to die. However carefully we try to, or we maintain our house, the house will fall to pieces. However jubilantly we celebrate Canada Day, Canada won't remain forever. I mean, the concept of Canada, what is Canada anyway? What is any? It means someone draws a line somewhere and they say, this is a country. Otherwise, the land is there. Before anyone came and said, this is Canada, the land was there. But at some point, some people came and said, this is Canada. There was no idea of Canada. So that the Canada won't stay forever. And even the country won't, the land itself won't stay, the planet won't stay. Nothing in this world will remain forever. But we are eternal living beings who exist in various states. We change body after body after body. So, like I say, this may sound like some boring lecture, but it's extremely important to understand. Nothing can be more important than this. Whatever we take as being important, we study in the school, we read the news. What's the important news? What is the important news? What's going on in the world these days? Anything? Must be something important. When I was in Chicago, the important news was the upcoming clash between the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Cubs. People take it as very important. Yeah. What's the news? Anything? Well, need to drop an atom bomb or something to keep the journalists busy. So we take everything in this world to be important. We take it very important. We take it to be very important. What is my hairstyle? What do I look? Put my show myself in the look in the mirror. What do I look like? What are others thinking of me? But if we understand that I'm an eternal living being, but due to material desires, I am trapped in a cycle of repeated birth and death in which I have to suffer again and again. Sometimes I suffer thinking I'm Canadian. Sometimes I suffer thinking I'm a dog. Sometimes I suffer thinking I'm a cat. We have to go through so many different species of life. Now this is a serious point to understand. I mean, Krishna consciousness is very joyful, no doubt, with singing and dancing for the pleasure of Krishna. And the prasadam, or the spiritual food, is unbeatable, that's for sure. But this understanding is essential. We're not just running some kind of gourmet dance show here. Just like there are so many clubs where you can go, you sing, you dance, and there's some music, and you get some food. But this Krishna conscious movement is not just singing and dancing and food so that we can enjoy it. But also this knowledge is given, this essential knowledge, which no one knows. Canada, so we're told by some people, the government is very good. What do you think? You don't think so. What do you think? Canadian government is good? They don't like the taxes. You don't want to say, well, they're going to take you away and throw... No, they're not going to. You can criticize it as much as you like. They won't execute you. But anyway, they look after the citizens, right? They have a health care system. That's why in America they say Canada's better. They have a health care system, an education system, and you don't get nearly so many murders as in America. So Canada's better, so we're told. But for all the good facets of the government and the society here, the government is failing in its duty to give proper knowledge to the citizens of what is the purpose of life. The families also, people are looking after their children. But unless we give children knowledge of the actual purpose of life, unless we give them knowledge of what happens after we die, then we're failing in our duty. Now we may say, well, how do we know what happens after death? Then you take knowledge from Bhagavad Gita, take knowledge from Krishna. This is not simply an opinion. This is a verifiable. Anyone can understand. Krishna gives examples in Bhagavad Gita that just, for instance, as we see, the body is changing. There's the baby, and then the baby becomes youth, the youth becomes middle age, the middle age becomes old age, and the old age becomes a photo in the newspaper. Rest in peace. There's no resting in peace. So, the body is changing, but the person stays the same. So, Krishna gives the example in Bhagavad Gita that just as the body is changing, the person stays the same, so when the body dies, the person, who is actually not the body at all, continues to exist. What is the stable factor? If you see a 6-month-old baby becomes a 6-year-old child, then a 16-year-old youth, the mother recognizes the same child, the same person, although the body is completely changed. The body of a 6-month-old child becomes, by the age of 6 years, has become very different. The mind has also become very different. The body and the mind are changing at every moment. but the person is the same. So what is it that the mother recognizes when the mother says, this is my child, that's at the age of 16? It's the person who remains unchanged. So when the body dies, the soul continues to exist. So, again, I'm saying, it may be repetitive, but it's worth hammering the point home, that this is very important, this is essential knowledge. If we don't know this, then it doesn't matter what else we do. It doesn't matter if we become a great sports champion or highly intelligent or highly wealthy. Nothing else matters, because this life is just a blip in time. We're transmigrating from one body to another, to another, to another. And what does it matter if just in a blip, you become a big blip instead of a small blip? It's meaningless. But what is meaningful is to understand who we actually are, how we can become free from the distress of repeated birth and death. These are very serious matters. Everyone has to suffer, as Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita. Everyone has to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. We are not meant for suffering. No one wants to suffer, but suffering is forced upon us. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the information by which we can become free from suffering, which if we do not take the prescription for becoming free for suffering, then we have to go on suffering, birth after birth after birth. That's why there's no rest in peace. That's just some imagination. It's just some delusion. Just like we think we can do 15 minutes meditation and then get peace. That's just a delusion. Actual peace comes by changing our consciousness to be in sync with the reality of our situation. So, the reality of our situation, I didn't say what it is in full. In the beginning, Krishna doesn't... This is chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, so he's just beginning his instruction. In the beginning, Krishna doesn't tell everything about the reality of our situation, but he makes clear what is the problem. The problem is misidentification of ourselves as the body instead of understanding our position as an eternal spiritual being. That is the cause of all our problems. All problems stem from one source, which is ignorance of our actual spiritual situation. So what that spiritual situation is, that will be described in detail later in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, that every living being, Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha, the eternal position of every living being is as a part and parcel of a servant of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this will all be described in Bhagavad Gita. Everyone please study Bhagavad Gita. This is not a sectarian religious book, but it is spiritual knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita there's no direction that you believe in this, otherwise you fall into hell forever. But rather Krishna is presenting spiritual knowledge by which any person who's a little bit intelligent, and by intelligent here I don't mean this MSc, PhD, but one who is actually thoughtful about the purpose of life, they can understand these principles and enact them in their lives. Bhagavad Gita is not some armchair philosophy book, but it is a treatise by which we can take this knowledge, enact it in our lives, and become free from birth and death. Right now we don't even know what the problem is, or we don't take it seriously enough. But from studying Bhagavad Gita, we can understand what the problem is, how to solve it, and take practical advice for doing so. So I request everyone to study this Bhagavad Gita, and particularly this edition, Bhagavad Gita as it is, because it is Bhagavad Gita as it is, giving the straightforward, clear message without any misinterpretation. So that is my request to you. So please study this very carefully. There's much more to say, but no time to say it now. I'll finish now unless there are any questions about this. If anyone has any question, you may please speak loudly. Speak loudly. Oh, there's a...
We're a little short on time, but please.
When I say that we're not the body...
Not the body, but the soul. Most of the time when you say that to people, they realize, or they say, oh yeah, I know this is just a temple. But how do we actually understand...
How do we understand practically? Well, we have to act on the platform of not being the body. Then we can understand. If we say, I'm not the body, and then we go out shopping to buy another 20 bottles of nail polish, obviously we don't understand we're not the body. So we have to act on the platform of spirit soul, which means to serve Krishna. That is the platform of the spirit. Do everything for Krishna. Okay, so another question?
You say you have to be free from birth and death. So what is after? Like, why we have?
What is after birth and death?
Is it good? How do we know it's good after that?
How do we know it's good after that? Well, that requires. First of all, if you have faith that we can get free from birth and death, it's already some faith, right? That there's something better. Birth and death, it's a pretty bad situation. You have to get born again and die again, so whatever it is, it's got to be better than that, right? But apart from that, we can have faith in Krishna. Everyone has some kind of faith. Some people, they feel hopeless. And they say, well, everything is meaningless, but that statement is meaningless. To say that everything is meaningless is an attempt to understand the situation that we're in. So that even in itself, the statement that everything is meaningless is an attempt to find some kind of meaning. So, if we have the faith that despite everything we see all around us, everything is pretty miserable, but ultimate reality is good. That requires some faith. That the whole universe is not some orchestrated sadism. That beyond this situation that we find ourselves in, there is a better situation. So that we accept the words of Shastra that reality is ultimately Satchidananda, eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. Satyam Shivam Sundaram is real, all good, and all beautiful, then we can endeavor for that. And we can practically experience, as we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, by chanting Hare Krishna, by worshipping the deity of Krishna, by associating with devotees of Krishna, that Krishna consciousness is actually joyful, but not on the platform of getting drunk. That's one kind of happiness, right? Getting drunk. One kind of happiness is driving a car fast on the highway, or even more fun, driving a motorbike. But that's ephemeral happiness. That's sensual happiness. That's just jerking up the senses. But the happiness of Krishna consciousness, which we can practically experience, is a happiness on a much more profound level. And it gets better and better and better. Yeah. So, let's finish. Do you just want to announce about the books? Hare Krishna. Thank you for your patience.
His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami Maharaj.
You know that devotion? We just took the recorder.